Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Gnar Trees podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. Adam Smith's The Wealth of Nations is a landmark work of political economy first published in 1776 and widely regarded as the foundational text of modern economics. This Wordsworth Classics of World Literature edition presents the book as both a major historical document and a still relevant analysis of how markets, labor, and trade generate national prosperity. Smith does not write a narrow technical manual. Instead, he combines economic reasoning with history, moral philosophy, and social observation to explain why some societies grow richer than others. Central to the work is his argument that division of labor, competition, and voluntary exchange can produce greater wealth than centralized control. At the same time, the book is not a simplistic celebration of markets, because Smith also examines the dangers of monopoly, mercantilism, and policy distortions. It remains important reading for understanding the intellectual origins of capitalism and the assumptions behind market-based economic thought. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, division of labor as the engine of productivity. One of Smith's most influential ideas is that specialization raises output dramatically. By dividing work into distinct tasks, individuals become more skilled, save time, and can focus on repeating the activities they perform best. Smith uses this principle to show that prosperity does not depend mainly on heroic effort or government direction, but on the organization of production itself. The logic is practical rather than abstract. When workers specialize, total efficiency rises, goods become cheaper, and more people can afford them. This mechanism also helps explain how economic growth expands beyond the narrow interests of any single producer. Smith's treatment is important because it links individual labor to wider social outcomes. Productivity gains are not merely technical improvements. They are the basis of rising living standards across an entire society. The book, therefore, frames specialization as a structural force that transforms isolated effort into sustained national wealth. Secondly, market coordination through prices, exchange, and self-interest. Smith argues that free exchange can coordinate economic activity more effectively than centralized planning. Individuals generally seek their own advantage, but in a competitive market, that pursuit is redirected through prices, bargaining, and exchange into outcomes that can benefit others as well. This does not mean self-interest is morally ideal. Rather, Smith is explaining a practical social mechanism. When markets are open, consumers reward useful producers, inefficient firms are disciplined, and resources tend to move toward more productive uses. The result is not perfect harmony, but a reliable system for organizing large-scale economic life without requiring a central authority to command every decision. Smith's analysis remains distinctive because it treats markets as a dynamic process of adjustment rather than a static model. He is interested in how commercial society actually functions, how incentives shape behavior, and why voluntary exchange can generate order from decentralized decisions. Thirdly, a criticism of monopoly, privilege, and mercantilist policy. The Wealth of Nations is not simply an argument for leaving all economic activity untouched. Smith repeatedly criticizes monopolies, guild restrictions, trade barriers, and policy systems that protect favored interests at the expense of the public. His attack on mercantilism is especially significant. He rejects the idea that national wealth should be measured by hoarded bullion or controlled trade surpluses, and instead emphasizes productive capacity and real consumption. Monopoly matters because it distorts prices, limits competition, and allows producers to earn profit without genuine efficiency. Smith is also alert to how business interests can influence legislation in their own favor. This makes the book more complex than a modern slogan for free markets. It is a defense of competition under conditions of fair rules, not an endorsement of private power, unchecked by law. That distinction is one reason the work still matters. It shows that markets require institutional design, and that economic freedom can be undermined by concentrated privilege as much as by excessive state control. Fourthly, the role of government in justice, public works, and basic institutions. Although Smith is famous for defending economic liberty, he does not argue that government should disappear from economic life. He assigns the state important functions, especially the protection of justice, the defense of the nation, and the provision of certain public works and institutions that private actors would not supply adequately. This is a crucial part of the book because it prevents a simplistic reading of Smith as an advocate of total laissez-faire. He understands that markets depend on legal order, credible enforcement, and shared infrastructure. Some services, such as roads, bridges, education, or other collective goods, may be essential for commerce, but not profitable enough for private provision alone. Smith's broader framework, therefore, combines limited government with essential public responsibilities. The state should not micromanage prices or production, but it should create the conditions under which exchange can work fairly and efficiently. This balance is one of the work's most durable contributions to economic thought. Lastly, historical method, and the human consequences of commercial society. A major reason the book endures is that Smith writes economic theory through history and social observation rather than through mathematical abstraction. He traces how institutions evolve, how labor becomes organized, and how commercial society shapes character, dependence, and opportunity. This gives the book a wider scope than many later economics texts. Smith is interested not only in wealth creation, but also in the social and moral effects of markets. He recognizes the benefits of commercial progress while remaining aware that an overly profit-driven society can produce inequality, narrow incentives, and forms of human degradation. That tension gives the work its lasting depth. It helps readers see that economics is not only about output and prices, but also about social relations, power, and the quality of everyday life. The book stands out because it connects a theory of prosperity to a broader account of civilization, making it both an economic argument and a study of modern society. In conclusion, readers who are interested in the origins of modern economics, the history of capitalism, or the policy debates behind free markets will benefit most from The Wealth of Nations. It is especially useful for students, business readers, policy thinkers, and general readers who want to understand why specialization, competition, trade, and institutional design became central ideas in economic analysis. The book also rewards readers who are willing to engage with a classic that is larger in ambition than a standard economics textbook. Instead of reducing economics to formulas, Smith presents a wide-ranging account of how societies become prosperous and how economic systems shape human behavior. That makes this edition especially valuable as an introduction to foundational economic thought. What distinguishes it from many later books in the genre is its combination of practical argument, historical range, and moral seriousness. Smith is not simply defending markets. He is explaining the conditions under which free exchange can serve the common good and the dangers that arise when privilege, monopoly, or policy distortion interfere. For that reason, the book remains a reference point for both economic theory and broader debates about liberty and public life. If you would like to support Adam Smith, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.